You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. With more than 30 weekly podcasts, HRN has something for every food lover. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org. This episode of Agave Road Trip is brought to you by Mezcal Ultramundo. Ultramundo is a mezcal brand owned by a family without any real historic connections to mezcal heritage. Instead, their connection is to nature. They own a 24,000-acre ranch that has been used to graze cattle. It's a beautiful wild place. Everywhere you turn, it's a sea of quiotes. Fresh quiotes, old quiotes, fallen quiotes, just sprouting quiotes, and specifically from Maguey Lamparillo, a variety that takes something like 15 to 18 years to reach maturity. Now, there's a lot to talk about with this brand, but I'm reluctant to do that because whatever I say will divert your attention from what I believe is the truly important story, those 24,000 acres of wild agave. You know, we spend a lot of time in this industry talking about sustainability, but the truth is, any spirit being shipped out of the community in which it's made isn't truly sustainable. The fossil fuels needed to make the glass bottles and to physically ship them aren't sustainable. So, no brand of spirit you're drinking is truly sustainable. I tend to instead look for practices that move us as an industry, move us as a species closer to sustainability. And Ultramundo's harvesting practices are a great example of exactly that. The experts who visited their ranch have suggested that so long as they limit their annual harvest to no more than 80% of what reaches maturity, they'll have a self-sustaining supply of this long-growth agave. Every time I return to Oaxaca, more and more of it is monoculture espadine. Row after row after row of these farmed agave are replacing wildlands where so many diverse plants once thrived alongside so many diverse insects, animals, and bacteria. And I get it. I understand why that happens. And I'm not suggesting we should all stop drinking Oaxacan espadine, but I am saying we need to see more projects like Ultramundo, projects that preserve the biodiversity of our planet. Ultramundo is available now in the USA, everywhere via mail order for consumers, and at wholesale in California for bars, restaurants, and liquor stores. If you believe in preserving wildlands and believe in preserving biodiversity, but still want to drink delicious mezcal, please give Ultramundo a try. Learn more at ultramundo.mx. That's ultramundo.mx. So much of what we do creates a carbon wake that is, given the structure of our modern world, nearly unavoidable. But we can minimize that wake by making diverse choices. I'm Lou Bank.
I am Cha Periwan.
This is Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed award-winning podcast that helps Gringex bartenders better understand agave, agave spirits, and rural Mexico.
And today we're going to talk about the main character of this podcast, which is agave. Right?
And how it is made into agave spirits in rural Mexico.
Well, no, actually we're going to take a... I think that both possibilities that can happen to the agave, right? Either it becomes booze or it creates babies.
Well, yeah, you know, that's like the kernel of this. And in essence, right, you've got this plant,
mm-hmm.
and the plant, like all other plants, has one purpose in life.
Tastes amazingly well.
You know, one purpose in life, which is to reproduce, to have babies. Which is, you know, pretty much all things, all living things.
Except Lubang.
And Chapa Periba.
Yeah, seems like it.
Right. So, it wants to make babies. And in order to make babies, right, it has to burn up energy. And that energy is sugar, in essence.
Yep. They can be fermentable. Well, they can be eaten by yeast and convert into alcohol and then separate from water and make beautiful things.
Right. Okay. So, you know, for the longest time, I've been saying an agave can be used for either thing. And now I'm starting to come around to the idea that, hang on, maybe you can do both things with it.
What, babies and booze?
Babies and booze.
This is going to be censored in some way.
Who the hell is going to
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Just like it sounds weird. But yeah, how? I mean, the only iteration of what you're referring to that I've ever heard, and I do have to go back to that interview and find a quote, and we're making an episode about that. But it's when I interviewed the guys from Ecuador doing what's the name of it? Chaguar. And they had another thing anyway. That they do. Yeah,
in
anyway.
Future Chava. In the future, future Chava. What was it called?
This is Future Chava. The drink from Ecuador, of which I couldn't remember its name, is Chaguar Miski, which will be almost exact same as pulque in Mexico.
Groovy. Thanks, dude.
Great. So those guys actually do let the agave flower while they're scratching its center to make pulque.
Right.
So they can do both. And that's the iteration that I know. Did I just ruin your episode?
No, not at all. Not at all. You know, and in fact, it's sort of where this idea first came to me is because hanging out at Rancho Loma Ancha, right, mm-hmm. the Tinacao, where they're making pulque south of Mexico City, a number of times that I've been there, I'll walk around with the tinacalero, and he'll be harvesting aguamiel from these plants. And I'd say every 10th or 11th plant has a little baby quiote coming out of it. And right? And a couple of times he's torn them out and given them to me. And they taste terrific in omelets the next morning. Yay, thank you very much. But that also made me think about, as I'm looking at the plants, like they're so densely packed that it's clear that some of these agave that from which he's harvesting the aguamiel that'll make the pulque, some of them have little offshoots, have the little hijuelos.
Hijuelo.
Yeah, close enough.
Yeah.
It was pretty good pronunciation, Chava. Yeah, so they like they oftentimes will have the hijuelos.
Yes. So okay, well.
So that's reproduction. Yeah. And you know, and so as I see that, I'm seeing a plant that's burning up some of its energy that they could be using to make booze. And so it's making babies and it's making booze.
So are you saying that the hijuelo is like the parachute of the agave? It now is destined to death and it's throwing this emergency system in order to make children while being, you know.
Yeah, it's doing that and it's creating a second. Obviously not every agave does this, but it's doing that and it's also throwing up a second quiote. And, you know, it makes me think about When Mescalero's Capone agave, right? Is that giving the? I'm not saying they're doing this intentionally, but does that give the agave a like greater chance of reproducing?
Mm. I mean, that's
and in doing so, is the Mescalero unwittingly reducing the potential yield of the plant because the plant's burning up the energy?
Well, that's. I mean, we had this quote from Lobo de la Sierra many episodes ago where he contradicts the common notion that Capone will yield more and will make a better mezcal.
Right.
He says that it actually would lose energy. And he's talking in the very specific case of Maximiliana. So we have asked this question consistently around Mexico and everybody else but him has told us that. But also we have to remember that Lobo de la Sierra is a very special mind in the industry. And honestly, he's one of the most organized producer that I've known. If there's someone counting and really understanding what's happening, he's a good reference. It's also interesting to me because, you know, like it's becoming, we talk of the hijuelos almost like bad guys now, right? Because the seedlings or the agaves that come out of seeds supposedly are the ones that, not supposedly, like that's a pretty much a fact. They tend to have more genetic diversity,
right,
and therefore they will be more resilient toward plagues, towards all kinds of stress factors that will kill a agave doesn't have that. Well, stress factors, I'm actually not sure. It's more about plagues.
Well, hang on. So let me push back against that a little bit, because I like and when I say push back, really, this is me asking questions because you're going to understand this better than I do. But I don't know that I would say that the hijuelos are genetically less resilient. What I would suggest is if you only have a field of hijuelos and one thing hits, like one disease hits, all of, and it's, and one of them is susceptible, they're all susceptible, right? But that's different than being weaker than the seedling, right?
Well, that is, now that you say that, I think that's sometimes I get angry at ourselves because I think we don't ask enough questions to have the full understanding of things. So, like, when does that, like, how many generations of hijuelos do you need to have so that you have a weaker population? So, say, you have a population of 100% agaves that were grown out of seeds. Mm-hmm. And then the second generation, it's all hijuelos.
Yeah.
Is like,
and
which
then the
is
third generation and the fourth generation?
Like, which is the percentage of fragility that's of the first to the fifth to the tenth? Because you're
suggesting the opposite of what I'm saying.
What, that they become more and more, like, the idea is like they're more closely related. So if a plague comes, like the same genes are going to have the same defense mechanisms. You're going to have the weird kids in the middle that are going to stop the plague. It's going to kill them all really fast.
Right. But there again, like, it, that's different. That's different than being genetically weaker.
Well, no, it's not being genetically weaker. That's sort of my point. It's not that, I mean, what does genetically weaker means anyway?
Well, I think that means, like, you know, in the case of humans, right? Like, so,
you're gonna get into trouble.
Yeah, no, I really am.
Come on, kid.
Being from West Virginia, I don't know. This is a road I want to go down, but you know, I think there are genetic weaknesses in some people for whatever reason.
Are you going to say that Alzheimer propens agave?
I wasn't, but kind of that? Or kind of, like, and maybe this is, you know, we really need a geneticist to finish this episode. But, you know, you've taken it in a different direction than I certainly intended. But, you know, I think the relevant question here for me is, I'm not saying everything should come from hijuelos, but if you can get both the baby and the booze from an agave, depending on where you are, and if you're talking about a species that's at risk.
Well, the origin of everything that you're saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's related to the idea that we are at a moment where more agaves need to be planted. Like it's, right? Like that is sort of a, and I will really push back against that.
Well, I think in certain communities, if they wish to continue producing at the level that they are now in terms of tequila and mezcal, that, yeah, they do need to. But, you know, this is our ongoing conversation. I don't think either you or I want to see those specific communities making more, let alone as much as they're making right now. And, you know, who are we to say that? But
in the case, I guess also this is, I mean, for example, in tequila, this is where this discussion is. It's a huge concern, and funny enough, they haven't done much about it.
Right.
Like,
right.
Even when we were trying to buy seeds of tequila Naveber in a private Facebook group dedicated to tequileros, everybody was mocking the hell out of us because you're like, oh, you silly kids, you want to plant seeds, you know, how long is that going to take to grow? Here's some hijuelos that are going to be ready in 4 years. Let's forget about mezcal for a second, because I think, like, it's not as aggressively urgent there. In tequila, this is, I mean, that is the one industry that it's really preoccupied about one plague knocking down hundreds of hectares of agave.
I'd say it's preoccupied to a point. It talks about it. It doesn't do much about it. Sort of like the weather. But, you know, to go back to your supposition it's somehow more important in tequila than it is in mezcal. When I was just down there 10 days ago in Oaxaca, driving from Centro to Etla, mm-hmm. on the roadside, there was a guy with a giant stand. And what was he selling?
Hijuelos.
That was it. and they were just stacks and stacks and stacks of them.
Yeah.
My point being, as we talk about Oaxaca becoming Jalisco, Mezcal becoming tequila, I think you're starting to see those signs. And sorry, we can't wait for your Espadín seeds.
But then I think like it should all come down to best practices, right? So I guess part of...
Is Esteban in the room with us? He is.
No, but you know, like I hear like these percentages being used when talking about how many agaves you should leave to go to Quiotes, no? Like mm-hmm. how many should you let flower for maintaining the bat population
right.
and in order to get some seeds and genetic yep. diversity, blah, yep. blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I never seen a percent, like somebody talking about percentage of, okay, this is the amount of hijuelos you can plant combined with this amount of seedlings in order to have a genetically diverse population on a field that indicates that it gets a pest, it's going to be able to be resilient. Have you ever heard anyone talk about this?
No, I'd love to hear that. That's a TED talk I would tune definitely. In for.
Well, no, because you know, like everybody, like I really see two camps. I see that
Hijuelo
camp and the agave from seed camp.
Right.
And honestly, you know, like we're talking about an industry that needs certain times, that needs right. certain pampering, and seeds are really complicated, as we have encountered ourselves in front of. Right.
The
survival rate, they take forever, blah blah. So if you were able to talk about, okay, this field, 20% seedlings, 80, or I don't know the percentage.
Right, right. But yeah, God, that's a long experiment. Speculate, right? Because in essence, you need to see a collapse and then see a similar field not collapse that was 50%, 50-50 versus 40-60 versus 70-30.
And does it make any sense? Like, and this actually was a study that I once proposed. So I'm going to, like, you know, try to get some of that glory. No, but imagine, like, maybe it's all hijuelos, which is different species. So you have a field that, like 20 hectares, that it's all hijuelo based.
Oh, that's interesting.
And you have different species, and that's what actually protects the hijuelos. So it doesn't matter that, you know, among all the arroqueños, they're all closely related, because if the plague comes, then you have the tempestades in the middle to, you know, bully that pest. So I don't know. Like these are, like, it's bizarre how sometimes these discussions happen just for the sake of discussing without trying to really distill like some conclusions that could be used in the fields.
Okay, I like that. The inconclusive conclusion.
No, this was a very conclusive conclusion.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay,
so you'll listen back to the episode and you'll realize that it was an inconclusive conclusion.
What? No, it was or was not?
It is.
Inconclusive.
Conclusive.
Inconclusive.
Sorry, I'm messing with you.
Yeah,
anyways, yeah. Well, adios, joven.
Yeah, hasta pronto.
This has been Agave Road Trip, the podcast that helps gringo bartenders learn about agave spirits. Your hosts are Lou Bank and Chava Periván. Sound engineering by Roy Sierra. Theme song performed by Gabriel Oliveira and Mark Rico. Sign up to become a road tripper and listen to more episodes at agaveroadtrip.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know. And if you hated it, recommend it to your enemies. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. Lou is in charge of our social media, so if he happens to sound like an old man, forgive him. He is one. Agave Road Trip is a production of 10 Angry Pit Bulls, Inc.
Agave Road Trip is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. To subscribe to the Heritage Radio Network newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with Heritage Radio Network on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find Heritage Radio Network at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. Heritage Radio Network couldn't do that without support from listeners like you. Become a part of the food
world's most innovative community today. Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the Heritage Radio Network family by becoming a member. To become a member of the Heritage Radio Network, click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Heritage Radio Network can become addictive. Programming you hear on Heritage Radio Network can drive you to eat, drink, and listen to more programming on Heritage Radio Network. If it drives you to drink, please do not drink and drive. Drink responsibly, eat responsibly too, and listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly. To listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly, wear protective earbuds. While wearing protective earbuds, do not drive or walk. Sit in a comfortable chair. If that comfortable chair has a hard seat, please remember to get up and stretch every 30 minutes. If you get up and stretch every 30 minutes, do not stretch beyond your abilities. Stay within your defined stretching capacity and consult a doctor who specializes in stretching. If you do not have a doctor, listen to all the shows on the Heritage Radio Network. There has to be at least one doctor among the Heritage Radio Network podcast hosts. Thanks for listening. Agave Road Trip out.